This is Will Tuttle, your host for the Worldwide Vegan Summit for Truth and Freedom. We now have the precious opportunity to learn from the deep experience and inspiring example of Dr. Pam Popper. She's an internationally recognized expert on nutrition, medicine, and health, and is the founder and executive director of Wellness Forum Health, providing nutrition and lifestyle education and intervention for optimal health. Pam has been featured in many acclaimed documentaries, including Processed People, Making a Killing, and Forks Over Knives. She is the co-author of the Forks Over Knives companion book, which was on the New York Times bestseller list for 66 weeks. She's the author of Food Over Medicine, and her newest book is COVID Operation, What Happened, Why It Happened, and What's Next. Dr. Popper is also a lobbyist and public policy expert and continually works toward changing laws that interfere with patients' right to choose their health provider and their method of care. She has testified in front of legislative committees on numerous occasions and has testified 3 times in front of the USDA's Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. She's the founder of the Make Americans Free Again movement and has been doing tremendous work really for many years and has been tracking what's been going on lately in the last year and a half, I think, better than almost anyone I know of in the healthcare field. Who's a vegan. So I'm really delighted that we have Dr. Popper with us. And so, Dr. Popper, I'd like to go ahead and start by just asking you, if you can, please tell us a little bit what you've learned about the medical establishment and how the unwillingness, really, to question the official narratives about food are harming people and what you've learned about that, and then maybe we can go from that into the other things that are happening here. But let's start with the food first. You've been questioning eating meat, dairy products, and eggs, and how has that helped the clients that you've had, that you have?
Well, I think I can just best answer that question with how I came to get involved with this, which was that I was living my life as a fat, unhealthy person at one time. Everybody knows the 120-pound me. People didn't see the 160-pound me. But and just, you know, tired all the time. And, you know, the whole story you hear. Fortunately, nothing bad had happened to me. Something eventually would have. But I happened upon an article in the early 1990s when it really wasn't very common to see information about diet and health. And it got me curious. And I started doing some research. And I asked the question that I think started my whole life in a different direction. I think I'm an intelligent person. I think I'm well-read. Why don't I know about this? And why doesn't anybody else know about this? Because everybody my age at that time was living the same way. We were all getting fat and looking middle-aged before we were middle-aged, really, when I think about it now. And so, you know, I think everything starts with you. You know, you look at yourself and say, okay, I'm going to do something different. I'm just going to start down this path. And the ineptitude, it wasn't just that people didn't know about diet. It's that medicine had deliberately omitted it from the discussion and in favor of drugs and procedures and tests and really pulling people into what I think a lot of us refer to as the medical mill, you know. And so and this borders on criminal, all right? In other words, if an $80,000 bypass surgery that can't possibly really help you avoid another heart attack, particularly if it's an elective surgery, okay, it's not just that how can you do something like that, so invasive, so expensive, it doesn't help. But a diet change which reduces your grocery bill actually would help. To withhold that information and promote the surgery, if that kind of behavior goes on, like in the finance business or the mortgage business, we call it criminal behavior, right? We put people who do enough of that in jail. We have laws against it. Informed consent laws govern everything. You can't buy a washing machine without looking at the warranty and all this kind of stuff. Wow. So that's how this all started. And I ended up starting my business, Wellness Forum Health, about 27 years ago. And our mandate, I felt, was to make decision making about healthcare the same thing, the same process as decision making about buying a house or a car or appliances or setting up a retirement account, where you look at risks and benefits and your options, and unless it's an emergency, then you decide what your course of action is going to be. And when you think about it, it was absurd to me as I started thinking about it that You know, nobody buys a house because the realtor says, you're really stupid about real estate, so I'm going to tell you where to live, right? You would get in the car and drive away if somebody said that to you. And if you pulled into the parking lot of the car dealership and they said, listen, people who don't know anything about cars, they shouldn't be picking cars. So we've picked out a nice red one here, sign the lease. You know, nobody engages in transactions like that. We all buy things and engage in activities that we don't know a lot about, and the assumption is the consumer's in charge until we show up in a doctor's office and the doctor says, you need this $80,000 procedure, and the person says, okay, how about next Thursday? And it's like you abandon all common sense, right? So I thought, I'm just going to attack the whole problem, which is the diet is part of it, the lifestyle habits, the exercise or lack thereof. But if you back up and figure out where does that come from, it comes from lack of informed consent. So if the medical profession doesn't have to provide it, we'll teach the consumers how to do it on their own. And that's how this all started.
Right. So you've been enormously successful. I've known you about your work for many, many years myself as a vegan activist, that you've been really helping countless people. You're based, I know, in the Midwest in Ohio. Just helping people to transition away from toxic food into healthier food and feel better. Now, I'd love to talk, because you are the author of this book about COVID, and I think it's so important, because very, very few, if any, people in the vegan community who are medical professionals, especially MDs, are saying a word questioning the consequences of the various things that are being rolled out, like masking people, for example, mm-hmm. locking down businesses, social distancing, using toxic hand sanitizers all the time. And then, mm-hmm. of course, the big one, these injections with endless boosters. I mean, can you please let us know what you think? First of all, it's a big question, but why we don't hear more pushback about that? I would love to hear what you think about that from the vegan community. And also, what's really going on here? I know these are big subjects, but you're one of the best people to talk about this.
Yeah, so I'll go back to my own experience. So after I figured out that in the areas of diabetes and heart disease and, you know, weight, chronic degenerative conditions, we're not telling people what the real cause is or offering the real solution to people. Well, what if all the rest of what we've been told is the same? All right, it's some type of deception we're being lied to. And so I started looking into it, and it was part of my job, as I saw, to prepare information to give to consumers so they would understand all the disclosures that are required to make an informed decision. So I started looking into this, and I find out that, first of all, in 1992, our government passed a law saying that the drug companies should pay the FDA to get their products reviewed. Okay, so this will be a shocker. By 2015, they were approving 96% of what's submitted. And I've said for a long time, I want to see the 4% they turn down. It must be like intravenous arsenic. And there's a conversation in the hallway that goes something like this. We got to look like we're paying attention, but send it to us next year. We'll probably let you have it, right? So, I mean, there's no possible way that objective decisions are being made about drugs and devices. That last year, I think their take was $2.1 billion from the drug and device makers. That's a lot of money. I started looking at how the drug companies and device makers were getting into setting diagnostic parameters so that more and more people could be deemed sick. So, you know, it used to be that you were lectured by your doctor when your fasting glucose was 140. Hey, you need to take off a few pounds, change your diet. And most people did that. And they stayed off of drugs. Well, then they changed it to 126. Then they made 126. They made up a new disease, pre-diabetes. Okay, so now all this endless testing. So you're going to the doctor all the time, healthy people going to the doctor and basically saying, take blood samples and urine analysis and poke and prod and images. Find something wrong with this body. Please find something wrong. And then give me some drugs and procedures to take care of it. So going back to the diabetes thing, they lowered it to 126. Then that became the benchmark for medicating for pre-diabetes. Now it's down to 80 to 100 with no consideration for aging. So I'm a 64-year-old vegan female who takes no drugs and perfect health. I can work 19 hours a day and I'm not tired and I feel great. I'm athletic. I'm never going to see fasting glucose of 80 again. You know why? Because I'm 64 that's not a disease being 64. Actually, it's just getting older, right? So anyway, all that. So it's the testing, and then there's no consideration anymore for the patient. Everybody's looking at files. So we're treating lab results and folders. All right. So a person has slightly elevated numbers for some reason, but they're eating well. They have absolutely zero risk of anything going wrong, but we got to give you a drug because your numbers are off, right? And this group started keeping these metrics, number needed to treat, NNT. And you look at the way that we're drugging people right now, and the NNT is sometimes 400 for one person to benefit. 400 to 1. So it's like buying lottery tickets, okay? That's like taking a statin drug if your cholesterol is slightly high, right? So I got curious about all of it, and I started looking into all of it, and it wasn't limited to this issue of diet could get rid of your diabetes. It was everything. I think what happened to some of our colleagues who have been very well-meaning and from whom we have learned a lot about a lot of things, they didn't get that extra step of curiosity going on.
Right.
They assumed that the rest of medicine was actually okay and in integrity, and it's not true. It just isn't true. The entire system is corrupt and conflicted and that sort of thing. And during the period of time that I've been researching, which is 30 years, I mean, we've had other fake pandemics. We've had other, you know, this vaccination issue just gets worse every year in terms of what's going on. And so when this happened, you know, people say, when did you know something was off? March 10th, I posted a video very early on. And I said, this isn't the first fake pandemic. The end goal is vaccinate everybody. The Chinese had an incentive to do it. And here's why they did it and why it happened. I went back and played that video for my Thursday group about a month ago. And it was spot on, except for I allowed for the possibility that this came from the wet market, which it clearly didn't. And I changed my mind on that later on. It's overwhelming evidence that it didn't come from the wet market.
Right.
And it's unfortunate because some of our colleagues hang on to that idea right now. But that's basically the story. I've been investigating how screwed up this whole mess is and how it hurts consumers. And it actually hurts doctors and health professionals with integrity, too. And arguing for dismantling the whole thing for a long time. I guess I'm an anarchist in the medical community.
So do you think that the numbers are being artificially inflated, that it's not that serious of a disease, and that we're being scared? Yes.
Well, I mean, Carrie Mullis was the developer. Well, first of all, I knew on March 10th we had a problem. And then what cemented it is when Mr. Fauci made an appearance the first time. I thought, because I had written my dissertation on the HIV/AIDS debacle, and what he did back then, he should have been in prison then. I'm serious. I think this guy is a serial killer, and they all escalate, and this is his grand slam home run, end of his career, hit it out of the ballpark, good times for Fauci kind of thing. That's a strong accusation to make, but we've essentially made it in court under oath with a lot of documentation, all right? So one thing I'll just share with you is that I have a lot of critics, as you know, enough that I have to live in a pretty locked down way right now to make sure that I'm safe. But having said that, what I find interesting is the number of people who are screaming at me, and I say, listen, why don't you show me all the data that you've gathered? Because we've got epidemiologists and psychologists and psychiatrists and public health experts and virologists and all these researchers who've helped us develop all this stuff for court cases. So tell me all the experts you've been hiring and putting on the payroll to come up with your information. They just stare at you and walk away and, you know, all that. But anyway, so what's really going on here is very dark. It goes very deep. It's awful to talk about what they have in mind. It's been planned for a long, long time. But yes, the numbers are inflated. And going back to the days of HIV/AIDS, Carrie Mullis at that point in time developed this PCR test, which they're using until the end of the year. They've acknowledged that it can't tell the difference between COVID and any SARS-CoV-2 and anything else, but they're going to use it for a few more months because it suits them well. But he said at the time, it is not to be used as a diagnostic tool. It's a lab amplification tool. And he won the Nobel Prize for that test as a lab amplification tool. And he said at the time, what happens when you use PCR technology is that you find a needle in the haystack, and then you can turn it into a haystack, which I think is an interesting analogy.
Amplifying.
And Mr. Fauci knows it. He was speaking at a virology conference last year, and I just have to say that what these people say every day makes our case. And I get up every morning, and I ask God to please keep them talking on camera, because that's actually how we're going to take them down in the end through the courts. He actually said last year at a virology conference, when you run that PCR test at 35 cycles or more, you get a bunch of false positives and dead nucleotides, and it's all garbage, all right? Well, the instruction manuals are to run it at 40 to 45 cycles. So by his own acknowledgement. So we have an epidemic of fake cases. The error rate when this PCR test was used at Dartmouth-Hitchcock in 2007 was 100%. 100% wrong, all right? But we've tested billions of people all over the world. And then on the basis of a fake test, we have called them cases. So based on this fake test, I would likely be a case. A case of what? What? A 64-year-old woman who takes no drugs, perfectly healthy, worked out in the gym, bench pressing my weight this morning. A case of what? Healthy person with a positive test of something. And then, of course, you know, through this whole thing, The good news about this is they were very sloppy in the way that they executed this. So just to give you an example of how skewed it all is, and I don't know if you've seen these data before, but we have screenshots of all this stuff. So by their own admission, here in Ohio, we have 11.5 million people. And our emperor says we have 18,611 deaths. That was like as of a couple months ago. In Vietnam, they have 98 billion people. 98 million, and it's kind of a third world country in parts. They have 35 deaths. Now, we got a worldwide pandemic going on. Can you explain that to me? Nigeria, you know, 209 million people, 1,793 deaths. All right. In fact, Ohio, with 11.5 million people, has more deaths than 11 of the most populated countries on the entire planet, including China. We have more deaths here. So one of the things I'm looking forward to asking our little emperor under oath is, you know, are you making stuff up, or were you so careless as to not call the leader of Vietnam and Nigeria and say, what are you doing over there? They're dying in the streets over here in Ohio. So like, what, tell me what to do so I can protect my people. And there's no way you can make sense of these numbers. So I could give you data like this and keep talking until tomorrow morning at this time or tomorrow afternoon at this time and never run out of new information to tell you that we've dug up on this. And it's overwhelming. And so what you're seeing, because we filed so many court cases, is you're watching the scrambling and hysteria that they're engaging in because they can't make this work anymore and they don't have an exit plan. So this is you see this now.
So you think, so basically these huge numbers of deaths are basically people that are dying of respiratory illness, diabetes, this and that, the other, and, you know,
car accidents.
Mostly old people, car accidents, and they're just labeling it as COVID because it's a narrative, an agenda to roll out a vaccine. And is that the basic idea? You think there's more, I mean, is that true? And you think there's more to it than that?
Oh, well, it's even darker than that. But I'll just back up and tell you, and you can watch this. This was in a White House press conference video when Deborah Birx, the scarf lady, just announced that the way they were going to categorize the deaths, and there's written information. I mean, we submitted this to the court. They produced a new manual and a new way of categorizing deaths, which means that if you're in a motorcycle accident, you have head trauma and you die, but post-mortem, they test you positive using the fake test for COVID. You're now a COVID death, right? So a reporter, an unusually curious reporter, because most of them sit there and stare off into space and dutifully report whatever they say, actually challenged the scarf lady and said, you're really going to do it this way? And she goes, yes. And she gave a couple of examples. So we don't know who had COVID because we're using a fake test, and we have no idea who died of it because we're categorizing motorcycle accidents as COVID deaths. And I don't know, I'm planning to live about 35 more years. I don't know if it's enough time to unravel all this stuff and figure it out. It'll be enough time to put the people who did this in prison. And some of them should probably be put to death. It's like what the Nazis did. So to go to what their real goal is, depopulation. They want to kill people, right? And I'm going to tell you what they're doing right now so you know, because we filed all this in court too. This is not a secret. Lots of documentation for it, all right? So, and by the way, when attorneys file things in court, just so you know, you can't be very wrong about it because you'll lose your law license. So you have to have affidavits and have look. You can't, if I went to our attorney and said, you know, I just want to file a lawsuit against Fauci and I'm going to make up some numbers. He can't file that till I document. He's got to be able to prove it. All right. So let's start with the people involved. Klaus Schwab is pulling the strings a little bit. He's with the World Economic Forum. He's a despicable human being. I mean, I just want to throw up when I watch him speak. But he wrote a great book called The Great Reset. And he says, the Earth will have 1 billion people. He hopes that most of them are Asian because they will follow instructions better than other people. Now, these are people who are criticizing others for being racist and discriminatory. I mean, and people listen to this criminal make those kinds of statements, and they go, oh, Klaus Schwab, you know. So then you've got people like Bill Gates. You know, Bill Gates has been thrown out of third world countries. He sterilized 500,000 girls against their permission it was either Nigeria or Kenya. It's in my book. I can't remember which country. He's been involved in so much nefarious activity. I can't remember which country goes with which nefarious activity. So anyway, Gates has been thrown out for inducing abortions in pregnant women, sterilizing girls against their will, without their knowing it. In India, he's been thrown out. And he's basically said the planet needs less people. All right, so let's go to what's just happening in the United States. And I've been very careful to make sure that the numbers that we're talking about are reliable. All right, so we're not hypothesizing. All right, so let's go with the CDC's numbers to begin with. All right, so according to the CDC, these shots that have been on the market for just a few months have killed about 13,000 and some people.
Right.
Now, the usual number of deaths that it takes to take a product off the market is between 15 and 25, not 1,000. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
15 to 25. We have 13,000 plus, and they're still going strong, mandating and the whole nine yards. But our attorney, Tom Renz, filed a lawsuit in an Alabama federal court with a whistleblower affidavit who has access to the back end of some of the databases. He says it's actually over 44,000. Now, that's a little bit more terrifying. You kill 44,000 people and you're still going strong, right?
Yeah.
But now we know there are 11 portals and that's just one of them. Hmm. And you start to think about this. How can you possibly attribute good intentions to this? But even if you just go to the 13,000 number, how can you possibly attribute good intentions to this, right? So I don't know. I'm taking them at their word. They're all into population control, these globalist people who are pulling the strings. And by the way, Bill Gates is considered the most powerful doctor in the world. There actually was a cover story that said, meet Bill Gates, the most powerful doctor in the world. How does this guy, who's sort of got a nefarious history himself, end up in that situation, right?
Well, yeah, I think there's a whole background, as I understand, you probably are aware of it too, of his father and eugenics and sort of trying to get rid of people who are it's kind of like, from the point of view of animal agriculture, sort of like culling the herd. You know, we got too many livestock. We got to get rid of some of them. It's a little bit unmanageable.
Yeah. And thinking about people that way is just, I'm upset about thinking of livestock that way. Right. I don't want to kill anything. You know, I'm one of those people. I'm happy when people take spiders out of the building instead of, you know what I mean? And right. So the thought of looking at humans as being that disposable. And I think the other thing is we should all be insulted at the idea that a few people who've appointed themselves like the leaders of the world because they want to be the leaders of the world. It's like me sitting here and saying, you know what? I'm the queen of the universe. I just appointed myself, right? So everybody should listen to me. And if I have enough money, I kind of get away with that. And isn't that a bit frightening, right? But these people have decided that they know what's best for the planet and for humanity. And this type of elitist, I'm better than you, smarter than you kind of mentality, I just find so despicable. And again, it comes from people who seem to want to accuse everybody else of being prejudiced or racist or whatever. And I don't know how they do it with a straight face at this point.
So can you maybe just say a few words? We still have some more time, but not a whole lot, but we have some more time. Can you say a few words maybe about the actual injections themselves that people are getting? This seems to be such an important part of it. Maybe a few words about that, and then also about the vaccine passports and how important that is to the agenda.
Well, the whole idea is to, you know, when you think about it, the mandating vaccines for children to go to school was kind of a dress rehearsal. And they got away with it. And in some states, I mean, you can't, in New York, they eliminated even the option for private schools to opt out. And then I think it's New Hampshire or Connecticut, they're trying to eliminate the option for homeschooling. So you just have no shot, no chance, but or choice, but to give your kids shots. So now what they want to do is they want to do that to the whole population. Like if you want to eat in restaurants, go to a concert, or maybe even buy food, you'll by gosh get the jab. And some people think, well, I'll just get one. Well, good luck with that, because I just read an article this morning. The president of Pfizer says that as the new variants come within 95 days, they can have a new vaccine for each variant. Well, RNA viruses mutate rapidly, right? And so this SARS-CoV-2, it mutated 11 times since you and I started talking. Right? So every 11 minutes or 20 minutes, we can pick another variant, and Pfizer will go to work and make a vaccine, and it becomes mandatory then for you to keep your vaccine card up to date on your phone so you can go into the grocery store and buy food or have a banking arrangement or whatever. That's what they want to do. And the world is closing in on some places that are trying to do that right now, like New York. So anyway, in terms of what's in this thing, we actually don't know. And that's what's frightening, because the drug companies, this arrangement that they've made with the FDA to kind of control the FDA in many ways, they don't have to disclose what's in the vaccines. They never have to give the raw data on any drug or vaccine that they develop. And right now, this is kind of chilling when you think about it. Pfizer's vaccine got full approval on Monday, and the trial data won't be available until 2023, and it won't be made public until 2025. So we'll be able to, in 2025, go back and figure out if what we're doing right now with massive tens of millions of Americans is a good idea or not. And again, how can somebody actually, this is easy to verify. For people watching this who think that I'm a conspiracy theorist or this can't be right, you can verify this with simple Google searches through the mainstream media. Look at the vaccine passports. Look at what they have in mind. Look at the approval. Look at the due dates on the trial data. And ask yourself, are you comfortable with doing this without any knowledge at all of what it's going to end up being about or the consequences? So, and people are having serious reactions. We talked about deaths. There are hundreds of thousands of severe reactions, and some of them are people who are never going to walk again. And some of these are children, by the way, who have almost 0% statistically chance of dying of COVID and were inducing pericarditis, myocarditis. How can you justify doing that to a 15-year-old?
So. Right. So there's no immunity, right? I mean, there's complete immunity for these companies. There's no way that they can actually have any legal ramifications. So why?
Since 1989, that's been the case on all these vaccines, and that's why they felt free to jack up the schedule to hundreds of them over the lifespan of a human. And I always ask people this. Let's say that tomorrow the federal government would come out and say, you know what? The car makers are making such a fuss about safety standards. And you know what we're really worried about? That they'll start making cars in other countries instead of here. So we got to put a stop to that. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have no safety standards. Just make cars. All right. And so inevitably, some of them are going to catch fire and some people are going to have accidents. So what we're going to do is we're going to charge a $250 tax on every car. And then when all these inevitably bad things happen, well, you could, like, if somebody in your family gets killed by a car that has a defect, well, you can sue and get some money from this government fund that we collect. Who would buy a car made in the United States? And that's the equivalent of what they've done with the vaccine makers. And again, you know, it is almost willful ignorance for people to not understand how ridiculous that is. I mean, that's on its face. If you ask just people in the street, would they think that this arrangement with cars would be okay? They go, it's ridiculous. It would never happen here. Well, they did it with vaccines. How do you know it would never happen here?
Right. So that's an interesting point, this idea of willful ignorance. And it seems to, like, again, in the vegan community, which is where we're supposedly very interested in knowing what's behind the curtain and what's really going on, why do you think there's so much willful ignorance even among people in the vegan community?
It's hard to explain, and it is incredibly damaging, all right? I think some of it goes back to what I said earlier about when you got curious about why we're not talking about eating plants instead of bypass surgery, and you realized what a terrible thing was being done to people. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't you expand your ideas beyond just that? You know, so it was that type of thing. I think that might be where it started. But it's at the point right now, what's going on is so obviously horrific that at some point in time, you just got to say, look, you know, this is a level of stupidity that is hard to fathom. And I believe right now that it's going to damage the community beyond recognition. And the reason I get emails every day from people who say, I'll never listen to anything these people say again. And it's easy to write off now, lower donations and that sort of thing to COVID, but sooner or later, it isn't going to be that. It's going to be, you got behind these jabs and my uncle got killed and you got behind this whole idea. My brother's business was bankrupted. I mean, there are real consequences here. And I'll say something else too. There are some members of our community that have not just been endorsing the vaccines and that sort of thing, but actively engaged in administering them. And something I would advise everybody to take a look at, you should watch the documentary called The Killing Nurses of the Third Reich. And it's about how doctors and nurses did the regime's bidding. And a lot of them were convicted of treason. A lot of them were hanged. They died as a result, or were killed as a result of what they did. Many of them did prison time. Not all of them. There are a lot of people who escaped who are quite involved with the Nazi regime. But we have the same thing going on right now. And one in particular used to be a friend, and I can't even believe I'm watching it happen. But cannot give out the shots fast enough, and I'm horribly disappointed.
Right, and there's quite a few even attacking vegans, or, you know, like you or other vegans who are questioning the narrative and saying that we're dangerous and we're going to, we're causing a lot of suffering and possible death by questioning the narrative. And these are medical professionals, or very often it's not. Very often it's just people who have bought into this. So you think it's just basically a failure to be curious and a failure to just be able to be honest about what's happening?
Well, I don't. In the beginning, you know, when I was criticizing my colleagues 2 years ago about there was one notorious exchange at a conference. I won't mention names, but the question that was asked of all the panel members is, you know, what do you say about colonoscopy? Okay. And my answer, we got a lecture from a doctor who said, well, I do surgery and I've seen a lot of polyps, and I'm pretty sure I'm saving people's lives by taking those polyps out. I said, okay, well, that's all interesting, but the research shows that colonoscopy does not reduce the risk of dying of colon cancer. As a screening tool, it's useless. And the Canadians took it off their list, right? So for every person you save, you kill one, and we call that a wash, all right? It's what it is. You're not saving lives. The person sitting next to me got angry. In other words, I didn't say anything angry, so this is what the data show. And went back to the story about polyps. They said, you're storytelling. I love stories, but I'm talking about data. And people should listen to your story, but they should see this data and then decide if they're going to get a colonoscopy. And I was just as calm as here right now. I'm with you. And we got a lot of anger about that, right? And later people came up to me and said it was real clear what was going on, and that was unbelievable, all right? So this had started, this fracturing had started, because I really have kind of been off to the side of this community, and I've watched as the And I'm sure you've seen this too. I didn't know we were going to get into all this stuff, but it's interesting. I'm sure you've seen this too. We're talking about converting to a plant-based diet, and we have to market this. Okay. If people walk away from us and think we're nuts, well, we've lost the whole thing, right? So I watched as every year we get more restrictions. Okay. We got salt's going to kill you. Coffee's going to kill you. You have a cocktail on your birthday. That's death. And gosh, if you eat a cookie, that's the slippery slope back to the American diet. You got to intermittent fast and got more and more and more and more rules to the place where we've gotten to the place where the view of food is its nutrients and calories on a plate. And if you attach any more significance to it than that, then you just must not care about your health. Well, the very first social experience humans had was sharing meals. There is a lot of significance of food beyond calories and nutrients on a plate, and calling people names and they're not a whole lot better, some of these people, than the medical doctors who say people don't care about themselves. Well, if you don't care about yourself to the extent these people think you should, get the same judgment from them. Mm-hmm. So I kind of started moving away from all of that. If salting the broccoli will make you eat the broccoli, we got to let you salt it, all right? And salt isn't going to kill you. Salt restriction might actually, but it's not going to kill you. So you start extending that out, that tone deaf, I'm not listening to anybody, I'm not considering anything else. That behavior has carried over into this. I'm right, I'm always right. Anybody who disagrees with me is wrong. This high and mighty judge, it's not a whole lot different. They would get along well in Fauci's agency, actually, some of them. Right. And I never thought I'd say that, but that's exactly what we're watching. And it actually started a long time ago. And then, like all things, it escalated. And here we are, you know. So the good thing that can come out of it is I think that some of these people will make themselves irrelevant. They'll certainly be embarrassed when this all comes out. And it will all come out. It is all coming out. All right. You're seeing even the mainstream media, and I've said this is an interesting perspective that I'll give you. The mainstream media benefited from being dutifully following orders from the pharmaceutical companies and the government. But you know what happened? Their numbers have crashed. I joke, only kind of joking. I can afford to advertise on CNN now. Their numbers are so low. So if you've noticed, they're starting to report things little bit at a time about the truth, all right? And they're going to turn on their masters, because this is what happens in a criminal enterprise, is that everybody, they're like rats in the sewer. You know, you take off the lid, the sunshine comes in, and they all start running to save themselves, and they don't care about anybody else anymore, and that's what's going to happen. The media is going to try to save itself, because the big ratings are going to be reporting what's really going on at some point. And then some of these people will start, none of them have any character. So all you have to do is get one of them in the hot seat and they'll give up everybody else. If it's, you know, they'll throw somebody under the bus like Fauci or the scarf lady or whatever. And then that person will sing like a canary. We'll probably hear the singing here in Ohio, you know?
Wow.
So.
Well, thank you. You know, maybe you could just close with talking a little bit about the work you're doing with Make Americans Free Again and the court case. Just brief, just some positive things that have been happening and what you've been in, and how people have been getting involved with the grassroots movement, perhaps, and what people can do to be part of the solution to this whole thing.
Yeah, so let's talk about positive stuff. We can fix this. And I wrote in my book that actually, if we do this right, you know, sometimes what you have to do is blow it up to build it again, because it gets to the place of not being fixable. So if you look at, I went through this period of time where I kind of lamented my pre-COVID life. And then I thought, no, my pre-COVID life is what it was allowing this to happen, right? So I don't want that. I want to go to something new, better, all right? So the government's collapsed. The media's collapsed. The healthcare system's collapsed. The education system has collapsed. So we can rebuild something better. So here's how we're doing it. First of all, we have three branches of government and two have collapsed, all right? Legislative branch useless, and our rulers, like the guy who runs Ohio, he's the emperor of Ohio. He used to be a governor, but he's not an elected official anymore. He doesn't care about people who live here. He's answering to somebody else, right? But the courts are still in business, and there are good courts out there. Not all of them, but there are good courts, and we've had the benefit of some of those. So we're going to sue the pants off of everybody, file in every jurisdiction we possibly can in order to find one judge who orders discovery, because we don't need to depose Mr. Fauci 11 times. One will do, you know, so that, and then everybody gets the benefit, right? So lawsuits are the thing. And so I started last year. I figured we got to raise $100 million to finance lawsuits. So you have to start somewhere. So I started a Thursday group and I thought we're going to build groups and we'll raise money and file lawsuits. Well, filing lawsuits is like watching paint dry. That's how they go through the court system, you know. So I noticed something about our meeting really early on as it started to grow. People were so disenfranchised from friends and family and all that sort of thing. This started to be like the social event of the week, right? And it grew. My group right now, we have like 100 plus people every week. And there's groups like this, thousands of them all over the country. So everybody met new friends, thinking alike, no masks, people hugging. We had fundraisers with 400 people when the gathering limits were 10. I mean, we had this whole underground life that we created, and it was wonderful. First of all, because we were getting away with it. And second of all, because people could have a good life in spite of what was going on. And we're still doing that because there are a lot of restrictions in a lot of places, right? But then we thought, well, what can we do to be productive while we're watching paint dry? You know, so we've got this idea. How about small business rescue? And we're still doing this too. Like people bring, they say, so-and-so is struggling. Well, we organize buying parties and we organize groups of people to buy from restaurants regularly and, you know, all that sort of thing. And then people started to feel successful instead of feeling like, oh my God, here comes some more bad news and some more bad news and some more bad news. It's like Thursday night, it's all good news. Look at what we're doing. Right. So that got to be fun. And we did quite a bit of that. We're still doing it. Last year we did some helping parents get kids out of school. This year we're on an all-out kick to get 500,000 to 1 million kids out of school and into better educational opportunities. The schools are dystopian buildings we used to call school. They're unsafe for a variety of reasons, particularly psychologically for children. So we're big involved with that. We have all kinds of resources. We built this huge website with every resource imaginable. We have private coaches and we do Zoom sessions every week for parents. And we have office hours with experienced parents. And then we started working on healthcare. And we're organizing significant minorities to walk out of healthcare institutions to make them change their vaccine mandates. But the other thing we're doing, and I've wanted to do this for a long time, because the healthcare regulatory system in this country is absurd. Right. So if you're a naturopath or an herbalist, you can get arrested for practicing without a license, or a nutritionist and not a dietitian. Right now, if you're a doctor, you can get your license suspended because you issue an exemption. You have to get a jab to work in a hospital. Well, here's the thing. If we can collect $100 from 5% of the healthcare providers in this country, we'd have $115 million a year to go after this situation. And I think for $115 million a year, I'm not the brightest lamp in the chandelier, but I believe I can clean that up. And we can start to have some fun, you know, because right now what happens is that they're easily able to scare people into compliance because most people don't have the money to fight these battles on their own. But if we can say to doctors in California who've been told, you issue more than 5 exemptions and we're going to investigate you, we can tell doctors in California, all of you who have a conscience, issue exemptions. You get in trouble, we'll pay your bills. All right. Then let's bankrupt the rainy day fund for the licensure boards while we're at it. So the more doctors that get in trouble, the happier we are, because it doesn't cost a lot more to defend 12 than 10. You know what I mean? And you really start to really go after it from an aggressive standpoint and back these people down. And so I think we can remake the regulatory scheme for healthcare in this country, because what they're doing to doctors is unconscionable. What they've done to unlicensed people, we're the only country on the planet that eliminated everything that wasn't conventional medicine. And we need to fix that problem. It's 100 years old. And so I firmly believe that if we do this right, getting the kids out of school, we get a chance, empty school buildings will make them change what they're doing, okay? Lots of money can make the regulatory scheme completely remake itself. And I think that we can one day, after when I'm 95 years old, I'm going to be sitting on my front porch saying, you know what? That was painful. What they did was awful. We put a lot of people away and took their assets away for doing it. We had to make a lot of things right. But all things considered, we never could have gotten to this good place here without that bad episode there. And then this would not have been for naught. You know what I mean?
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Pam Popper, for that beautiful, positive vision. And I really want to encourage everyone to go to your website. So what would you suggest if people want to find out more and be part of this beautiful vision and the work you're actually doing, the practical work you're actually doing?
Yeah. So join us. So here's what we did. My email address, I give it out to everybody, pampopper@msn.com. All right. So the first thing, and go to makeamericansfreeagain.com and join. So we do a conference call every week for people who don't know what we're doing, want to have more knowledge, have questions about all this stuff. I do it noon on Thursday. It's all free. All right. I do a healthcare calls a couple times a week. Groups of healthcare professionals, teach them about what we're doing and how we're going to help them and all that kind of stuff. We have every week at least three events for people who need help as parents. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should pull my child out of school. All that's free. Everything free. All right. If you want to donate, we really appreciate that. But all the money goes to the attorneys, except for a little bit for our attorney to have an assistant because he needs that. All the rest of it we spend on legal fees. And then you can get involved in this effort too. You can start a Thursday group. People sometimes say, oh, I've never done anything like that before. I've never done anything like this before, but I'm glad I did it. And I look forward to my Thursday group every single week. I never miss it. So we can show you how to have this great underground life if you live in a terrible place like New York, like we have here. And so anyway, send me an email, go to the website, get involved, and we can fix this. If I didn't think we could fix this, I'd be out of here, but I know we can. We're gonna.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks again. Make Americans Free Again is the website, and it's important to stay positive, go vegan, and question all these narratives. Thank you so much, Dr. Pampoff.
Thank you.